ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Continuing with discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, much of this discussion might seem to be technical. Well, it could be considered technical, intellectual. There are many devotees who they're very happy just to offer flowers to Krishna, to dress Krishna, to chant the names of Krishna without considering so much deep philosophy, and Krishna is also pleased with that. But he's also pleased with devotees who expound his glories in various ways. He, as we'll find out in one name just coming up, he is the Vedas. He gives the Vedas, he gives knowledge of himself, and he is stava priya. He likes glorification of himself. We also like glorification of ourselves, but that's not meant for us. If we hear ourselves praised, we like it very much, but for us, that's a contamination. To like to be praised. And those who praise other than Krishna, they're also in a contaminated position. Shvavid vara hoshtra karai sangstuta purusha pashuhu nayat karna pato peta jatu nama gada gajaha. Yeah, I always forget that last line. Bhagavatam states that persons who praise persons other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're just like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So praise is meant for Krishna, not for anyone else. Krishna is to be praised. He likes to be praised. His glories are unlimited. And there are unlimited ways to glorify him, but it's best to glorify him through the authorized channels, just like we are reading the Vishnu Sahasranam, which was spoken by Bhishma Dev. There are other Vishnu Sahasranams. There are others, there are so many. Balaram Sahasranam, Gopal Sahasranam, this Lalita Sahasranam. There's also the. But we are reading this technical description, you can say. So Krishna is also pleased with that. And for people who are investigating the universe in various ways and trying to understand how it's going on and becoming puzzled, thinking they know the solution and then becoming puzzled more and more, they can simply hear about the glories of Krishna. And the basic point is that he is supreme. That's all. This whole Vishnu Sahasranam can be summarized in one word, Krishna. All attractive. Or a little bit expanded, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashasya Shriyaha Jnana Vairagya Yoschaiva Shandang Bhaga Itingana. Bhagavan is thus known because he has all possessions, all opulence, all power, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge and all renunciation. So he is supreme. this point is to be understood. This demons, they don't like to hear that someone other than themselves is supreme. But actually Krishna is supreme. How do we know? How can we know who is supreme? They should be, that person should be superior in all respects. If we accept that there is God, then he should be superior in all respects. Asamordva. No one is equal to him, and no one is superior to him. So devotees, they become very pleased to hear this. And actually it's a great relief to know that someone apart from myself is supreme. Because we're all struggling in this world trying to show that we're better than others. And it's really a struggle, and it just brings distress to ourselves and others because we're not supreme. We're trying to pretend that we're supreme, but it doesn't work because we're not supreme, and therefore we suffer because we're trying to be supreme, but we're not. And we suffer trying to show that we're better than others. So it's a great relief just to admit, Krishna, you are supreme, I'm not. Let me take shelter of Krishna. Instead of taking shelter of this egoism, kamam ashrita dushpray, taking shelter of material desires, yadahankaram ashrita, taking shelter of false ego. If we simply take shelter of Krishna, Krishna, you're supreme, and you are protecting me. So it's a very comfortable, safe position, natural position, whereas trying to show ourselves to be supreme is unnatural and painful. So Krishna is supreme because he has so many qualities. Ananta Kalyana Guna Vishishta. He is possessed of unlimited transcendental qualities which are all beneficial for everyone. Unlike the impersonalists, they want to say the Supreme has no qualities, but it's just the opposite. He is possessed of unlimited, his qualities are unlimited in quantity, and each quality is also unlimited in quality. So in all ways, he is gunavan, not nirguna, saguna, or full of all qualities. Now we find that materialistic people, they're very anxious to show themselves to be very important, to have more and more possessions, because this gives them some, it gives them identity. Everyone is trying to make their identity. And who am I? If someone has no money, no position in the world, we may say, he's no one. At least in English, you say, he's no one. Means insignificant. No money, no position, not attractive in any way. It means you have no identity. Or in modern India, you have to make yourself a success. You have to be someone. So you have to, means you have to get money, have your name in the newspaper, get photographed with all the film stars in Bollywood, have your, like this, and you become someone, a household name. How do you get that? Because you have to have qualities like being the prime minister of a country or being a terrorist. That also you get to be known, right? It's one way to get known is go and shoot someone who's already well known. And then you get to be well known. If you just shoot someone in the street, then you won't get well known. But if you shoot a well-known person, then you become well-known. Or if you become a mass killer, then you become well-known. So that's one way to get prominence. So people, they want to bring attention to themselves by having, they feel, I have identity. If you now I have a very strong identity. You see, I have big house, big car, servants, big dog, which won the prize in the competition. Yeah, people are anxious. The dog will win the dog competition. See, my dog. Not just any dog. It's the best dog in the whole of Bangalore. So, in this way, people, they like to puff themselves up with false identity. Someone who sees through all of this, they may become a renunciant and just, all right, now I have nothing. They see through the madness of this world. Just like the Jains, who are often very rich, well, it doesn't happen very often, but a rich Jain, they may renounce the world, become a sadhu, and then they go in a procession and throw away diamonds and gold in the street, making a big show of how they're very renounced. As if they possessed anything in the first place. And then they like to become renowned. No, no, all right, I'm not part of all this. I'm withdrawn from that. They like to show that. Now I have no... I don't identify with all of that. They identify themselves. In Jain language, I don't know, but the impersonalists will say, Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman, that's all. No, nothing to do with this world. But then again, they get some name and fame from that, if they're very renounced. There was this sadhu, he used to live in Vrindavan on stilts. What was his name? He lived to be over 100 years old. Is he... Dayara Baba. Was that the name? He was just living in the Yamuna on a platform on some stilts, and he didn't interact with anyone. He was very famous. People came from all over to see him. He was so renounced. So the renunciation is or vairagya, or non-attachment. That is one of the qualities of Krishna. So if someone has that, then they also become popular. So that's another trap of Maya. You give everything up, and then you again become noticed for that. So then you may just become crazy, like Vamsi Das Babaji, or Gorky Shaw Das Babaji. People ask him for initiation, he beat them with an umbrella and wander around naked sometimes. Just act like Nityananda Prabhu, acting like a madman, and just like antisocial. Gorky Shaw Das Babaji Maharaj appeared to be an antisocial person. He didn't like to mix with people. He went to live in the latrine because he didn't like to mix with people. So these are actually sane people. Well, they don't have anything to, no identification with this material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says this. Bishoye amare, pagala balaya ongete dibeka dhuli. Let the materialistic persons calling me mad, they'll throw dirt and dust on me. And he's thinking that will be very nice. Not just to be detached, not just to be separate from the people, they'll actually... You can live separately from the people, live a quiet, peaceful existence, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, better they all forcibly reject me. So we have no position in this material world whatsoever. However, all of this can be achieved without going to such extreme. Of course, for the great pure devotees, it's not that they're going to any extreme, they're just being Krishna conscious, that's all. And then people react to them in different... They're acting in a Krishna conscious manner. Or they're just naturally situated in Krishna conscious. For Gorky Shaw Das Babaji, it was not that he's performing austerities or any such thing. He's just being absorbed in Krishna without any thought of what the world thinks of him whatsoever. And that's just the way he does it. Whether he dresses or not, or where he lives, or what he... He's not concerned at all what other people think about him. So all this can be achieved simply by accepting Krishna as supreme. That's all. And one may live in this world also. But just like knowing that it's just like some kind of dream or something, that I'm stuck in this dream and it's some kind of dream I'm stuck in, that it's just, I don't belong here. After some time I'm going to wake up and then I'll see where I really, this is not me, this not this world. So we hear about Krishna and cultivate that consciousness, and then one day we wake up. People call that dying, but for a Vaishnava, that means he just goes to the world where he's been living in. He's only superficially living in this world. He's actually living with Krishna, but people, they can't see that or understand that. So just for the sake of this world, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we don't find any instance of him acting like a madman in such a way that people throw dust and dirt on him. In fact, he had a very respectable position in this world. But he didn't, and he executed his duties very responsibly, but that wasn't his life. To say that he's Kedarnath Datta Babu, they don't understand. He is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Completely a different name. To materialistic people, Kedarnath Datta. To the devotees, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They never refer to him as Kedarnath Datta. He is living two lives, or this outside life. It's not the real life. So this way, hearing about Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna. We can take shelter of Krishna by accepting him as supreme, and we are subordinate to him. So we hear about Krishna. Anyway, the first name here, it's not a name that directly or in the most obvious way establishes Krishna's supremacy, but it more describes his beauty. Pushkaraksha, one who has lotus eyes. So all that's also supreme, because no one has eyes as beautiful as Krishna. Although in Bengali there's a saying, Prabhupada used to sometimes quote that. Kana chale nam poddalocha. You have a child is born one-eyed, and you give him the name Padmalochan, lotus-eyed. So you may do that out of sentiment, you may do so. That's a saying, this saying, Kana chalayanam paddalochan. That's a saying that someone ascribes qualities to something, or they wish it has the qualities which it doesn't actually have. Wishful thinking. So Krishna's eyes are actually very beautiful. Lotus-eyed. He's called lotus-eyed. So what does that mean? His eyes are as beautiful as a lotus. We can say like that. There are certain adjectives which are often used in relationship to Krishna. Chandramukh. Face like the moon. We can say like that. But actually, whatever beauty is there in the lotus or in the moon only comes from Krishna. So, it's not that the lotus, Krishna is beautiful like a lotus, but we could say rather the lotus reflects the beauty of Krishna. And so, the lotus is fortunate enough to be stated in relation to Krishna. Lotus eyed. Very beautiful eyes. There's that one story of Ramanujacharya. I wonder how many people here in Bengal know of Ramanujacharya. We should actually distribute this, his life story. Maybe in Tamil we should do that, because people should feel a little... People have a sentiment for their own country or whatever, state. So they should know that such a person lived in this land, spoke their language, wrote in their language. They should know. They don't know. Now they think what the greatest Tamil person is, what, some cricket player or some politician or whatever. They don't know such great personalities. Not only him, so many Alvas have appeared there. So there's one story of him. There are so many stories of him which demonstrates what is bhakti. We can understand bhakti through the lives of the devotees who are bhakti rasa patra. Ek bhagavata varo, bhagavata shastra, or bhagavat bhakta bhakti rasa patra. There are two kinds of bhagavats. One is the book Bhagavat. That's the main one, or the center. And another is the devotee who is the bhakti rasa patra, who is the receptacle, or who embodies bhakti rasa. So there's one story. There was one man, Dhanurdas, who was, he had a bad reputation because he was so much attached to his wife. In more refined cultures, if a man demonstrates inordinate attachment to his wife, that is considered to be not proper. But this man shamelessly, he would walk everywhere holding an umbrella for his wife and looking at her all the time. So then Ramanuja, he came upon him and said, what is this fascination that you have? You see the eyes of my wife? They're so beautiful. Why should I not be attached? So Ramanuja said, if I can show you some eyes more beautiful, then will you become attached there? He said, yeah, but you won't show me. He was convinced his wife is the most beautiful. So Ramanuja brought him to the temple of Ranganath. And so many people go for darshan of Ranganath Swami, but by the mercy of Ramanuja, he could appreciate how these eyes, very big eyes, they're so beautiful. And then he became a disciple of Ramanuja, and his wife also. He didn't leave his wife, they remained together, but their attachment to each other was no longer on the bodily platform, but they were attached, very much attached to each other in the service of Ramanuja. So, lotus-eyed. There are so many different words for lotus in Sanskrit and so many different words for eye. So then you can mix them all up and you can make some maybe few hundred names for Krishna. Not you can make, but they're already there. Different words for lotus. This Pushkara, that specifically means a blue lotus. I collected a few names for lotus. Abja means born from water. Pushkara, that's Pundarik, the name for lotus. Pankaja, born from the mud. Padma is a very well known. Ambuja also means born from water. Aravinda, Ambhoja, Sarasija. No, I can't read my own writing here. Ah, a similar one. Sarasiruha, Ambhuruha. So there are different words for eye also. Nayana Aksha, Chakshu, Netra. There are some words for eye. So like this, the names can be mixed up. Padma Aksha, lotus eye. Padma Netra, Padma Nayana. Similarly, there are many words for feet. So there are many words for lotus feet. So in this way, so many ways the Lord is described as lotus-eyed. And we shall pray for the day when we're attracted to the lotus feet, the lotus everything of Krishna. Kunti Devi prays. What is that prayer? Namah. Anyone? Namah Pankaja Nabhaya. Namah Pankaja Maline. Namah Pankaja Netraya. Namaste Pankajangraye. She prays to him, offering obeisance to his lotus Nabha, navel, to his who is decorated with a garland of lotuses, who has lotus eyes and lotus feet. So the lotus is very pleasing. Krishna's eyes are very pleasing. So we like to remember his lotus eyes. This Lord who is all-powerful, all-knowing, but the devotees, they appreciate his lotus eyes, so beautiful. We see the gopis also, they had the Krishna, he was hiding from them, he revealed himself as four-handed Narayana. And they offered obeisance to Narayana and said, Narayana, all glories to you. Where's Krishna? They were not so much interested in the majestic form of Narayana. They wanted to know, where is Krishna? So this name, Pundarikaksha, this will come later also. So that will be discussed more, about a little more than 500 names later. So another name, Mahasvana. This is Pushkaraksha or Pundarikaksha. These well-known names of Krishna. This Mahasvana, not so very well-known, but no less important. Maha means great. Svana means sound. Great sound. So this is the commentators, they generally they explain this to mean that the Vedas, Krishna is the Vedas. But great can also mean sound. Great sound can also mean very loud sound. So Nrisimhadeva especially, when he appeared, he made such a roaring sound that the whole universe was pervaded by that sound. And great can also mean great in any way, very charming. So the sound of Krishna's voice is very sweet and charming. But generally it's translated to mean the Vedas. Great meaning great in significance. It is very important. People are talking so many sounds. We just heard someone is calling out. What was she calling? What was she selling? Did you note? Flowers. What language was she calling in? Canada. That's the general language of the street vendors here, is it? So many people are calling out so many. There are so many sounds, but the sound, the significant sound, is that of the Vedas. So that is with his breathing. With his breathing, the Vedas are manifested. We just breathe, that's all. We know that we breathe in and out. But Krishna, his breathing, all the Vedas come out. All knowledge, which we, tiny little beings, we or the best of the human beings, the most intelligent and cultured and pious, they try to understand what is the sound of the Vedas. So Krishna is so subtle and beyond our comprehension, just with his breathing. He doesn't have to think and compose and, you know, make some experiments and then put it in a scientific journal and get it refereed by others and then come out with some theory. He simply breathes out all knowledge, that's all. Eternally existing. The Vedas. Veda means eternally existing. It's not that Krishna created the Vedas, but it's just like everything is in existence eternally. Of course, matter that goes through various phases of manifestation, non-manifestation, but the Vedas, they're eternally glorifying Krishna, and they eternally exist with Krishna, and they're eternally not different from Krishna. So the great sound is the Vedas, is Krishna. Now the next name, Anadi Nidhana. Adi is a well-known word, which means beginning. Anadi means without beginning. Nidhan means no wealth. And in this context, it's generally understood to mean destruction. When you have nothing, that means you're destroyed, you're finished. Just like someone may say, well, he was a big businessman, now he's finished. It means he lost all his wealth. So Krishna is anadi nidhana, means without beginning and without end also. It's not that his opulence came into being at some point, or that his existence came into being at some point, or that there will ever be any point in which he will cease to exist. So this term, anadi nidhana, it comes up several times in Mahabharata and is equated with Krishna as time. No beginning, no end. Kunti Devi, she uses this phrase. Manye tvam kalam ishanam anadi nidhanam vibhum samang charantam sarvatra bhutanam yangmita kalihi. She says that I respect you as Kala, as time, the controller, who is anadi nidhana, with no beginning and no end. Time destroys everything, but time is never destroyed. Vibhum, all powerful. Time is very powerful. The influence of the time is a very big topic. Generally, the scientists, they try to understand the time. What is time? Those who are in the higher echelons of physics. But there's a whole other dimension to time which scientists are not aware of, which they can learn of from Srimad Bhagavatam. How time is the energy of and non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in which everything exists, and it exerts different influences at different times within this material, within different phases within this material world. Sometimes in some places the sattva-gun is prominent, sometimes in some places raja-gun is prominent, sometimes in some places tamagun is prominent. At the present time, the influence of Kali is prominent, and therefore everything gets worse day by day. What's that verse? Tato anudanim raja tatas chanudanim tatas chanudinam raja satyam, shocham, kshamadaya, kalena, that's the word kalena, kalena balena rajan nangshanti ayur balang, smitihi, yeah. So, in this Kali Yuga, due to the very powerful influence of time, with the passing of every day, tatas chanu dinam raja, satyam, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance in the sense of being able to tolerate heat, cold, hunger, thirst, and so on. Shama, daya, mercy, lifespan, bodily strength, mental strength, they all decrease day by day, day by day. So the influence of time is very powerful. So, yeah, that's a very big subject. But here it's described as anadi nidhanam. That which has no beginning, has no destruction, but destroys everything. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says this. Anadi nidhanam. Oh, first that Kunti, I have to get. Samang sarva. Sarva. Anadi nidhanam vibhum. Samang sarvatra. Yeah, now I've. Bhutanam yanmita kalihi. She says that this dissension between living beings, it comes about due to the influence of time. There's quarrel, just even with no reason, people just by the influence of time, they start to quarrel. That we sing also every morning. This Sangsara Dava Nala. This material world is compared to forest fire, which just no one knows how it starts, but it starts to burn. So, like that, all the time factor. Due to time, there's creation, maintenance, and destruction, but time itself is not. It's not subject to these phases, and Krishna is not subject to these phases. There's neither beginning nor end of Krishna. It appears that he's born in this world. It appears that he dies. But that's only from our perspective. That example is there of the we're sitting in a room, we look out the window, we see a horse goes past. The horse doesn't come into being. From our vision, we see the horse just for the few seconds it takes to go past the window. But the horse existed before we saw it and after we saw it. Just our spectrum of vision is limited to the window. So Krishna has no beginning or end, which is inconceivable for us in this material situation, because we just expect everything to have a beginning and an end. We just presume like that. But Krishna is without beginning or an end. In Gita is going to say that this is... Mrityu sarvaharashchaham. Time is often equated with death also. Death which takes everything away. See, people are making their identity by getting more and more possessions or winning prizes, getting awards, and then death, everything is gone. People might remember you, but your name, you might have a statue erected, but it doesn't help you at all. At the moment of death, completely cut off from everything, whatever may be there. Completely, just everything, whatever you had. One moment, you have family, children, money, servants, house, name, fame. Next moment, off somewhere else. You can't retain a link with that. Of course, if one has a very strong desire to, then material energy may allow you to come back as a cockroach. I just posted that. Was that this morning? I think I posted that. Prabhupada, he noted that someone's worshipping the picture of their father, but they don't know this father is in the toilet in the house as a cockroach. Because he was attached to the house, but he didn't, so he came back, but he didn't have the punya to come back as anything more than a cockroach. I presume Prabhupada must have seen a cockroach and recognized this as the previous owner of the house. In one place, one of my godbrothers told me that the devotees had rented a house in Stockholm in Sweden, some apartment, and they walked in, as they walked in with Prabhupada, one rat ran through. And Prabhupada said, that was the owner of the house previously. Prabhupada could see that. But he doesn't know that. The rat doesn't know that. In this Raja Vidya book, you'll find this story that the man, he makes a big house for his sons, and they all live in that very nicely. In the next life, he becomes a cobbler. And he comes looking for some work. And his son, who he had done everything for in his previous life, he beats him and drives him away. So time can be very cruel. Like that. So, for our existence, there is an end. Or, even if we hang on to something, we want, due to attachment, we want to hang on to something, but it's not pleasing. And eventually you have to, I mean, if you become a cockroach, but then your son who's worshipping your picture, he'll get some spray and de-cockroach you. And then you have to go on. You can't remain. So Krishna is in a completely different category. No beginning, no end. And there is no beginning and no end means that all, no destruction means he doesn't go through any aging process. Even though he's very old, it's not like that stupid picture. I mean, it's a very, you know, a very impressive picture in one way, but in other ways, very stupid. A famous picture in the Sistine Chapel in Rome. Did you see that? Did you ever go there and see that? Did you ever go to Rome and see? Did you ever go, Govindadatta? See, you're living just short distance. People from all over. I mean, it's not very far to Rome from Slovenia, so. It's very impressive. Huge buildings of the Vatican. They have this big picture of, on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, of God. Painting of God. With a long beard looking very old because, you know, he's God, right? He's coming back from a long time. Oh. Really, I mean, we don't, you know, in one sense, we don't have anything against Christians, but it's just, you know, they should really take lessons from Prabhupada's books. If they're at all sincere, they should. But we do take objection to their, you know, making propaganda when it's like little children or something. All their ideas are so stupid. God is old, he's got a long beard and looks, as if he's under the influence of time, but he's not. They don't know what the meaning of God is. He is Advaitam Achutam Anadim Anantarupam Adyang Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. He's the original, oldest person, but still he always appears as a fresh youth. Pushkaraksha, beautiful lotus eyes. Not that his eyes become all clouded, and he has to get glasses, and then he has to go for an eye camp to get an operation. It's no, it's just a ridiculous idea. Really, they should learn. He's not under the influence of time. His body is transcendental, is of man is made in the image of God, so we learn from the English version of the Bible, means that, yes, we could say human-like form, Narakriti, Narakriti Parang Brahma, the supreme spirit is in the form of a man, not in the form of a man. Man is in the form of him. So without beginning or end. So there are other meanings of nidhana, which lack of wealth. So he also doesn't, this anadi nidhana. So this anadi means without beginning, and the negativity there must be some technical grammatical term. This anadi, so it's anadi and anidhana also. The negativizer, a at the beginning, which becomes an before adi, that means anadi anidham. So nidhan is a negative, and it's a double negative, becomes a plus. So you may say, well, why have a double negative? Well, to emphasize the point that he is not subject to destruction or death. Others may be. Others are. If we simply say he is sadhan, he has wealth, he has possessions, you may say, well, others have also. Others have also, but they must come to the position of nidham, with being without wealth. But Krishna is anidham. He never loses his potency or his possessions. He never destroyed. So nidhan means conclusion in the sense of finishing. So Krishna's pastimes also, there's no beginning and no end. His qualities are ananta, they are unlimited, both in number and in scope. His pastimes also, they're unlimited in number and in scope. There's how much can we experience in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj writes that even one moment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, even Ananta Shesh, he could not finish describing ever. At every moment he performed such pastimes that no one can fathom the depth of them. But we just try to, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, I'm just trying to write something. That's all. To give some idea. But actually it's way, way beyond our capacity to even understand or appreciate. How great is Krishna? So Krishna never lacks wealth. Even when he appears as a sannyasi, it was also mentioned in Vishnu Sahasranam, Sanyasa Krit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he leaves everything of this world but what is that? To taste and to distribute premadham. Ki kar sanyase mor. What does he say? Ki kar sanyase mor. Nija premadham. What business do I have in taking sannyas? My real wealth is prema. So he was never attached to anything of this material world. But just as a show, you can say. He left his home, his wife, his mother, his friends, his birthplace, and went out into the world to... Already he has the premadhan, love of the wealth of love of Krishna. But he goes out into the world to distribute that. So he's never without that wealth of love. Krishna his real wealth as that's also discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when there's a discussion between Swarup Damodar and Srivas, and Srivas is trying to say, you see, in Vaikuntha there are so many palaces, and Lakshmi is ruling, Lakshmi Narayana, very opulent. And Swarup Damodar says, yeah, but you don't understand the wealth of Vrindavan, the trees and the birds and the river and the wind is blowing and the sound of Krishna's flute and the gopis' ankle bells, which the cowherd boys, of course Srivas doesn't say all, and now I'm extrapolating a little bit. The cowherd boys are going through the forest with so many cows, millions of cows, and then they can hear just through the trees. They can't see, but they can hear tinkling of the ankle bells. So this is the wealth of Vrindavan, which people who are attracted to opulence, they cannot appreciate that. So Krishna is never divorced from that. Krishna is always with full wealth, of which his highest wealth is prema dhan. Golokera prema dhan harinama sankirtan. So he comes to distribute that. Yeah, so it's very technical, we could say. All right, I'll finish there for now. Forty-two names. Have been discussed by myself. No. Next we have Dhata, Vidhata, Dhata Uttamaha. Dhatu Uttama. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yeah.
We praise the devotees, Krishna devotees.
We praise Krishna's devotees also, yeah. We shouldn't praise anyone else. Yeah, I did say that, yeah. Yeah. Or we praise someone in relation to Krishna only. We also praise the devotees. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.